I was sad. I was sad for a man who had worked in my administration, and particularly sad for his family.
So how can you be sad when justice is served, when a verdict is returned after... how long has this investigation been going on?
I'm sad. I'm going to cry.
You know, once again, there was more weirdness happening in the political scene in this country today than room to discuss it in a three-hour program. It seems like somebody has opened a floodgate somewhere. Rehab Rush. I got some sound from Limbaugh that I'm going to play in just a minute. You're going to love this. Rehab Rush went totally psychotic on the Libby verdict, and according to Death by Temptation, Rush claims that the Wilsons set Libby up. The Wilsons set Libby up. And eventually. Scooter will be vindicated. Now, moving from the ridiculous to the more ridiculous, Foxy the Slow Man couldn't understand the meaning of the word cloud in today's briefing, which centered on the Libby verdict. The Guacamoron in chief is planning, get this, an anti-Chavez tour of South America. That's going to go over like a pork chop at a bar mitzvah, I'll guarantee you. But he put down his maracas long enough today to establish this commission headed by Dole and Donna Shalala, the Wounded Warrior Commission. Did these half-wits have to try to brand everything? Now they're branding Wounded Warrior. Brought to you by your friends in the Bush crime family. The Wounded Warrior Commission, which will investigate the Walter Reed scandal. He appointed Donna Shalala, Lalala, Lalala, and Bob Dole to head the commission. Yeah, Dole's still alive. However, we were discussing this today. Kathy and I have at least one ad hominem attack a day against some right-wing jackass in D.C. Today it was Bob Dole's turn in the barrel. And we decided that after Dole tours Walter Reed, maybe he can stop by the department where they do plastic surgery and see if there's anything they can do for his face, like maybe loosen up the last six surgeries on his face. Jesus, God, it looks like somebody grabbed his ears and tried to sew them together behind his head. It's so scary. Have you all seen the movie Brazil? Remember all the plastic surgery that went on in there? Dole looks like he's auditioning for the new season of Nip Tuck. It's unbelievable. What is with this guy? He can't get it up, so he starts pitching. What did he pitch? Viagra? With Britney Spears, or who was it with? No, it wasn't Britney.
Well, it's getting a little confusing. Apparently, Britney Spears, that was the Pepsi promotion. I think he was trying to wash down the Viagra with the Pepsi.
Oh, that's right. That's the commercial
where
he's giving the dirty old man looks to a dirty young woman. Right. So Dole, is there anything on Dole that does work? Well, his pen hand works. That's always right in that position to hold the pen. That's not bad. That's worked for, I don't know, 50 years. Anyway. Speaking of warriors, Chucklenuts is, the warriors that Chucklenuts is wounding. Defense Secretary Gates held a briefing today to announce the rollout of another minimum of 5,000. They're referring to them as replacements in Iraq. That's a story about Irish folk singers, isn't it? Jesus, God, I guess we ran through the first surge pretty quickly. It's only going to be 21,500. No, now they're saying it's going to be up to 40,000. I don't know where to begin. So let us begin with some idiocy. All right? No, we're coming to Rush next. That's worse than idiocy. That's perversity. But some real idiocy. Are you all familiar with Corporal Matt Sanchez? Now, you got to take this story with a few grains of salt, because when we saw the story today, we got a couple of emails later from the sources that said, be careful with this story. We're not sure if this is real. But it was on Oberman's program tonight, too. So not that that particularly means it's real, but I'm going to go with the real part. Are you all familiar with Corporal Matt Sanchez? He is, if you do know him at all, he's the handsome 36-year-old Columbia University junior and U.S. Marine Corps reservist. And he recently made the rounds of all these right-wing talk shows like the O'Reilly Factor and Hannity and Combs, where he got all kinds of mouth-open praise for coming forward and complaining about his treatment at the hands of Columbia's radical anti-military students who called him names and mocked his military service. Now, Sanchez became such a hero of the right that he was feted at the CPAC conference where Ann Coulter made her faggot remark. Sanchez wrote an op-ed piece on his experience at Columbia University for the New York Post. And he began a blog and a MySpace page chronicling his media exposure. Now, if you're like most people, and I want to thank, who am I thanking here? I'm thanking joemygod.blogspot.com. This is where all this comes from. Joe, my God. joemygod.blogspot.com. The author there says, now, if you're like me, you might think, 36 years old and he's a junior in college and only a corporal in the Marines? Odd, but not totally implausible. But Corporal Matt Sanchez's face tinkled a few gay bells out there in fairyland. And last night, he writes, I began to get emails letting me know that his rather late appearance on the Ivy League scene was because Sanchez has had a lengthy career in gay porn, working under the names Rod Majors and Pierre LaBranche, starring in such films, art films, as Jawbreaker, Donkey Blank, and Blank Blanks of Blank, where his blank, 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 blank earned him a devoted following. Now, the author writes, porn stars are entitled to enter the military. Although Sanchez obviously had to do it on the down low, porn stars are entitled to have a right-wing ideology, even though the very people he supports would love to see gay porn stars strung up by the blanks. Wait, he says, have I seen that movie? But oh, the irony of Sanchez appearing with Bill O'Reilly and Faggot Coulter, happily posing as she did with Sanchez for a photo op. The right wing has gobbled this porn hunk with a spoon, never knowing that tons of men have gobbled. Okay, we'll leave that part out. The author says, now let's all watch how Coulter, Malkin, O'Reilly, etc. try to spin this one. This is going to be good. Well, I maintain that most right wingers, excuse me, not that there's anything wrong with this, are deeply closeted homosexuals who enjoy gay porn. Not that there's anything wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with it. What's wrong with it is the way they try to demonize their more interesting impulses. Those impulses being towards the men bedding other men and the women bedding other women. And they just can't seem to handle it. Michelle Malkin is a classic example. I think O'Reilly is just, I don't know, gay as a priest. I really do. I think so many of these people are. And if they would just state their case and forget about it, who cares who's gay? The right wingers care. They have to keep a scorecard. They have to keep track. And the reason they do that is to see if their name ever shows up on a list. It's so sad. It really is so sad. So we had Jeff Guckert, who infiltrated the White House press corps and infiltrated probably Karl Rove and a few other wounded warriors. And now we have this guy, Rod Majors. Well, thanks to joemygod.blogspot.com for the rather interesting, even though I had to leave out a lot of what the writer wrote. You can go there and read it in its unexpurgated version, though. It's much more entertaining than what I just said. All right, coming up right after the break, the pig man has a meltdown today and explains to his brain-dead, ridiculously out-of-touch audience the real story behind the Libby conviction. Stay tuned. Chuckleheads. The hour. All right. I love to do this every once in a while because the pig man is such an aberrant psychopath in a country that has produced more than our share of radio or television psychopaths. What, me? Nah. But Limbaugh is just, I don't know, he certainly is unique in the annals of broadcast history. The nearest I can come to someone like Limbaugh is Joseph Goebbels or Tokyo Rose or Father Coughlin from this country back in the 30s. Limbaugh is just astonishingly corrupt, filthy, a junkie, a drug addict. He makes trips to the Dominican Republic with his one pill of Viagra in order to, in case he can't get aroused with the young people that are fed to him, he's got his pill. You remember that story. So the only thing that I can think of that justifies my playing Limbaugh clips is comic relief. I mean, this guy is so out there. He's no longer a threat to the Republic as he has been for over a decade. He has become a clown and a drug addicted clown at that. Anyway, the Pigman's show was already underway yesterday when the Irving Libby verdict was delivered, so he had to make some off-the-cuff comments. Not easy when half your brain is tied to an addiction to downers, right? But the pig man managed to evoke some sympathy for poor Irving, who was only trying to protect the innocent Bush administration from that mean old Joe Wilson. But all is well. Libby will win on appeal. Because, and have you noticed how every right-winger in the country is on the same page? The jurors were stupid and confused.
So here we have poor old Scooter Libby. Try to put yourself in his shoes. The verdicts here would seem to me to be able to cement the notion that it's been happening in American politics for a long time, that you can criminalize policy. This was basically the administration trying to fight back against a bunch of lies being told by Joseph Wilson, who was never brought under oath. It is what it is. It's unfortunate and sad. He's not a bad guy at all, and it's looks like we've got the successful criminalization of politics. I don't know status of appeals and that sort of thing. An appeal, obviously you get an appeal on this, but the grounds... you have the opportunity for an appeal, and the grounds here will be these jurors had no clue what they were deciding. They were just based on the questions that they were asking. These jurors were just, they were spinning in there, didn't even know what this case was about. It has to be retried. There are some grounds here for an appeal, and the Libby lawyer said that he's totally confident that Libby, in time, will be vindicated.
Oh, Jesus God. He says this was basically the Bush administration trying to fight back. How? By outing a covert CIA agent? And then he says, again, a fight back against a bunch of lies being told by Joseph Wilson, who was never brought under oath. Did Wilson force Irving Libby to out his wife and then lie to the FBI about it? Is that what happened? You stupid ass. Is that what happened, big guy? He's not a bad guy at all, and it looks like we've got the successful criminalization of politics. What? Can you say Bill Clinton? What the hell was that, if not the criminalization of politics? You rat bastard, and your ilk spent
8 years, and you still do it, trying to criminalize politics. Everybody stay home, except the nutballs on the right and the Bible thumpers and drug addicts like you, Rush.
But don't you love it? The jurors had no clue. They didn't know what the case was about. Ah, all right. So either the oxymoron, have we got time for another one? Either the oxymoron is back on the pills, or they left him with serious Vicodin psychosis, as well as his deafness, because he actually believes, no kidding, that Joe Wilson and Valerie Plame actually concocted this trip to Africa as an elaborate scheme to bring down Scooter Libby. There, that's it. That's the ticket. Joe Wilson and Valerie Plame sat down one night, got drunk, got high, did something, and said, oh, let's get Scooter Libby. Let's get that son of a bitch. Let's bring him down. According to Pigman, they knew that Joe Wilson would not find uranium in Africa, and they knew in advance that Bush would state the opposite in his State of Union address. You see, Valerie Plame and Joe Wilson were psychic, and they could tell what was going to be said. Months and months later in the George W. Bush lying, filthy, let's all go to war and die. Well, not all of us, just 150,000 family members. Joe Wilson and Valerie Plame were unique in U.S. spy history and ambassadorial functions. They could see the future. They knew what people were going to do. We'll have more in the saga right after the break. How Joe Wilson and Valerie Plame went after Scooter Libby and won.
The next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
All right, back to the filthy, disgusting, drug-addicted, child-molesting pig man who went on his program today and, or was it yesterday, and pled the case for Louis Libby, Irving Louis Libby. The case being that that dirty Joe Wilson and his tawdry wife set all this up. They were after Scooter Libby for some reason, according to the Pigman. They just wanted to bring him down. So according to the Pigman, the Wilsons knew that Joe would not find uranium in Africa. They knew in advance that Bush would state the opposite in his State of the Union address. And they also knew that Wilson would then write a story, a column that would get published in the New York Times after the lies in the State of the Union address, where Wilson would lay out his imaginary trip to Africa that never occurred. You see how all this works? That would anger the Bush administration, which would cause them to seek revenge by having Dick Armitage disclose Valerie Plame's covert status to Libby, who would then spread it to the media and later lied to FBI officials that Tim Russert told him her name, thus causing Libby to be indicted for perjury. They knew, Valerie and Joe, that all this would end Valerie's career. It would ruin 20 years of CIA research and investment in her field, possibly get her killed, and probably cause the death of CIA assets all around the Mideast. But, by God, they'd get Libby. Of course, what a brilliant plan.
The idea that any administration is supposed to sit around and let people lie about it. Poor old Joe Wilson. Poor old left-winger, Berkeley 60s retread Joe Wilson is not supposed to be criticized. He's above it. Because he was criticizing the wall. And he is not supposed to be critical. The Bush administration, well, he says one guy, the administration mounting an effort against, why, that's a crime. I happen to think that Valerie Wilson and Joe Wilson are anti-war.
No!
Bush set out with somebody to set all of this up, and they got their dream realized today. I think they were trying to undermine the whole war in Iraq and the war on terror for whatever their own political reasons are, and set up this whole trip, send Wilson over there to say that there was no evidence. And politics is one thing. Sending somebody to prison is another.
Yeah, by Christ, you'll know about that someday, won't you, lard ass, huh? My God, this makes about as much sense as Limbaugh's pre-rehab claim that program directors around the country that carried his program were deliberately slowing down his broadcasts to make his speech sound slurred. Remember that? Remember that little slice of madness from this drug-addicted pedophile? Jesus God!
They're slowing down my program out there to make me sound like I'm slurring my words, which I'm not. I've been wearing headphones for a long time, and after a while, your hearing starts to go. Of course, these goddamn drugs aren't helping either.
Oh, my God. He set up the whole trip. Valerie Plame and Joe Wilson sat down and set it all up in order to get Irving Lewis Libby. Oh, my God.
Well, Valerie, now, if we talk about my going to Niger, and word gets out about our grand plot to get Scooter Libby here, you know that they may kill you.
Oh, that's all right, dear. It's more important to me to get Scooter Libby. My life doesn't mean anything. I just want to see Scooter Libby be convicted.
Well, all right, dear.
Jesus Christ. Last one from the King of Paranoid Delusions. I don't know what's scarier. The fact that the pig man believes the Wilsons set up this intricate scheme to trap Libby, or the fact that there are Limbaugh ditto heads out there who believe the pig man. So here Limbaugh describes how the Libby verdict is really a victory for the Republicans.
You know why? Well, you know, after the election, I said I wasn't going to carry water for these Republicans anymore because, you know, they just let me down. But I think this verdict is really a victory for the Republicans because it's going to piss them off and cause them to go after the liberals and attack them with bears or something like that.
This guy clearly needs to either get back on the meds or get back off. I'm not sure which.
Now, I don't think, because of their arrogance, I don't think the libs have any idea how this decision angers conservatives and Republicans in this country.
Woo!
They're poking the bear. The bear of conservatism and Republicans who went dormant last fall for whatever reasons. Republicans needed to be taught a lesson. But you got William Jefferson now, who ought to be under indictment. He's on the Homeland Security Committee. You got Sandy Bergler with a slap on the wrist. He's going to get his security clearance back just in time to join the Clinton administration in 2009. People out there are upset. The libs are poking the bear. The bear is awakening after hibernating for way too long. This has the chance to do more for the Republican Party than anything else in the short run. And the more the Democrats gloat, and the more they politicize this, and the more they lie about what this case and this trial was about, the angrier they are going to make Republicans and conservatives in this country.
Eek! Yikes! Oh no, here come the bears! Run! Run, everybody! Run! Run! You know what is weird about this? Didn't Irving Libby's weird novel have a sex scene involving a woman and a bear? Ew! Talk about poking the bear! Oh, come on, Rush! There are women and children that listen to your program! Poking the bear! With what?
The bear is awakening after hibernating for way too long!
And the bear is horny. Or hungry. And, the more the Democrats gloat, the more they politicize this, and the more they lie about what this case and this trial about, the angrier they're going to make Republicans. And when we get angry, we go to the Dominican Republic and beat the hell out of children. or we stay here and eat more Vicodin. What a freak. What a freak.
What an but he does admit that Hillary Clinton, he says Hillary Clinton is going to be the president in 2009. Did you hear that? Huh?
You have Sandy Bergler with a slap on the wrist who's going to get his security clearance back just in time to join the Clinton administration in 2009.
Jesus Christ. Limbaugh, you are such a freak. You are such a freak. Jesus, God.
Now, from Tony Slo's briefing today, let's segue right into this. You want to go right, because this is still on the Irving Libby case. Irving Libby and Tony and Bears. Oh, my. From the sublime to the stupid, from the stupid to the stupider, from the stupider to the stupidest, Foxy the Snowman got out there today and tried to spin the Irving Libby verdict, or at least avoid the subject entirely, but he had no answers on the Bush crime family's reversal positions on firing known leakers. Remember all that? You remember that? Going to fire? Uh-huh. And he was extra careful with his language when it came to the notion of a presidential pardon. The first crack, White House reporter says, Tony, have there been any discussions, either with the president or among staff members, about a pardon for Scooter Libby?
I'm not aware of any. And let me just say that all of this conversation, speculation about a pardon, I know makes for interesting speculation, but it's just that. Right now, Scooter Libby and his attorneys have made it clear that they're going to try to get a retrial. If they don't get that, they're going to get an appeal. And we really haven't been commenting on any aspect of it. As we pointed out before, there is a process. You know, and it's available to anybody who's been convicted in the United States.
Well, not to split hairs with you, jackass, but there are 350 people being held in Guantanamo, which I believe is U.S. territory. At least it is as long as we pay the lease to Castro. There are people scattered around the planet to whom we deny due process. So it's not available to anyone who has been charged, convicted, arrested, or manhandled by the Bush crime family's, quote, justice system, end quote. You know, what is amazing, Scooter Libby is tried and convicted, facing up to 25 years in prison, and the unconscionable bastard walks out of the courtroom free as a bird until the sentencing phase, which is when? 3 months from now? Meanwhile, the Bush crime family denies people habeas corpus, denies people First Amendment protection, denies people every sort of legal procedure that Scooter Libby felt entitled to, and the drug-addicted pig man screams was really
a miscarriage of justice. But they're poking the bear. I'll tell you, they're poking the bear. I wish somebody would poke me. I need to go back to Dominican Republic for that and get poked. I like to numb these feelings. I like to poke. Sitting on the television just might be my life. I'm a poker. Everybody's out there looking for a new pill.
Truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malone.
Nine before the hour. All right, here is back to Snow Job.
He hedges on the old ethics issue that keeps plaguing this criminal president and fake president in this corrupt, filthy administration. The next crack White House reporter says, Tony, the president said that he expects everyone on his staff to uphold the highest ethical standards. Does the president believe that the trial showed that members of his administration leaked classified information? I mean, the fact that he hasn't taken any action against anyone, does that indeed mean that everyone has acted ethically?
I don't think the president's going to get into the business of trying to characterize it. The one thing that he has said all along is that you need to allow this system to work, and he has confidence in our system of justice.
Does he stand by his statement that anyone involved in leaked classified information will no longer work here?
Well, again, I think what we have to do is just take a look. First, what you're trying to do is to draw me into a conversation about matters that may not have been at trial, but certainly are not appropriate to comment on this juncture.
Oh, for Christ's sake, you phony ass. And so it went for most of the briefing. Tony just wouldn't answer any questions about Libby, period. Maybe he didn't want to be fleshered, you know, subpoenaed at some point. Finally, Slow Tony grapples with the language in the reporter's question, trying to understand the term cloud. That's a tough one, isn't it, Truth Seeker? Remember, we've said before, the real evil rat in this administration, Karl Rove, handpicked Tony Snow, plucked him right out of a Fox News channel because Tony Snow is a dimwit, and then purposely keep in the dark about White House business. Even though this freak is supposed to be a spokes geek for the White House, he speaks for nobody. He knows nothing, and he really doesn't. It's just a face to put out there. That was part of the plan to make sure the reporters never again received any kind of useful information from the White House. Keep that in mind as you listen to this exchange. The reporter says, Tony, has the president yet spoken to the vice president about the Libby verdict? Have they discussed it? And what are his thoughts? To those, for example, who say this leaves a cloud over the White House, over the vice president in particular.
Let me make it clear. The vice president and the president have confidential conversations. They don't share them with us. Did it come out? I don't know. I can guess.
Yeah.
It's a pretty hot topic today.
Yeah.
But not having absolute confirmation, I'm just not going to tell you yes or no.
Yeah.
But furthermore, they don't share their conversations with us. So I cannot tell you what they talk about. They don't pass it on to us. It's one of the reasons why I think there's so much trust and also closeness between the two.
What do you say to those who say this leaves a cloud hanging over the White House, and in particular the vice president?
Their words,
I'm just quoting.
Oh, I know. Well, but it's... The use of terms like cloud, because this has come up before, is what does that mean?
Well, I could tell you, Tony, in pretty direct, gutter, working-class language, but I probably wouldn't be on the program long enough to get the whole sentence out. What does that mean about a cloud? Oh, you know, maybe, I don't know, sometimes I think maybe it would have been a good idea to go to work for Sirius, because if I'm working for Sirius, I love the Drobnys, I love Nova M, but if I were working for Sirius, I could say... without censorship, just like Howard Stern does, what's on my mind when I hear this moron. He says they don't pass on to us. I don't know who us is, the president and the vice president. Their conversations. That's why they're so close. That's why they're so close. That's why they play a stroke butt every once in a while, because they trust each other. Here, come here, George. Let me stroke your butt. Okay, let me stroke yours. No, me first. No, me first. That, of course, and their mutual lust for human blood and Iraqi oil and war profiteering and no-bid contracts and all the other things they can shoot, maim, kill, or steal. Yeah, they have a lot in common, these two. Yeah, they have a lot in common. What does that mean, the word cloud? Using the terms like cloud, what does that mean? Well, it's hard to tell with Tony Slow if he's being cagey or if he doesn't really know the meaning of the word cloud. Now, that's possible. He did work for Fox. So it could be that he's looking at that as a trick question. Cloud? Wait a minute, cloud. What does that mean, cloud? What's this female reporter trying to... The Guacamoron. Got time for the Guacamoron? We don't? Okay, well, we'll play when we come back. Two from the Guacamoron. And then we're going to move on to the more serious aspects of this evening's program. What am I waiting for here? Huh? Am I waiting for the music to start? You can't start.
Are you waiting for clouds?
Can you start the music 10 seconds early?
No.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Do
you remember how much hell they gave Clinton over parsing the word is?
Yeah.
What is? Cloud. What a cloud. Now, when you say cloud, do you mean cloudy?
You're just trying to fill up this hideous blank space in the program. Okay, now play it. Can you do it now? There you go. Here we go. Here we go. There it is. All right. Is this what happens when we don't time the program out exactly, precisely, down to the last second? We'll be back after the break. If the Drobnys are listening, I'm just kidding about Sirius.
Right? You just want to cuss on the air.
So badly. I want to say the F word, and I don't mean faggot. I want to say the MF word. I want to say all of them. I just want to go nuts some night. I really do.
You're scaring me now.
Oh, man! Would I have a few choice words for the big man? Here come the Bears.
Stay with us. Don't go away. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Now, Dave Lindorf, who was the investigative reporter based in Philadelphia, his work is available at the website thiscan'tbehappening.net. He also writes for counterpunch.org. And his latest book, co-authored with Barbara Olshansky, is The Case for Impeachment, The Legal Argument for Removing Bush from Office. Writing at Common Dreams yesterday, this is what Lindorf said. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but just a couple of bits of it here. Lindorf writes, so Libby has taken the fall. 3.5 years and a long, bloody war after he and a gang of warmongers in the White House and Blair House, including President Bush and Vice President Cheney, set out to undermine and trash the reputation of an Iraq war critic, former Ambassador Joseph Wilson. Libby has been found guilty of perjury, lying to the FBI, and obstruction of justice by a Washington jury. Now, maybe Special Counsel Patrick Fitzgerald and what passes for journalists in the mainstream media can get down to the real business of finding out just why the entire White House smear operation was unleashed upon a minor State Department official, and why they went so far as to violate federal law and expose his CIA operative wife, Valerie Plame, in the process destroying her entire network of contacts for monitoring the spread of nuclear weapons in the Middle East. Because that's what this whole Libby story is really about. The whole focus of the media in this case has been on the narrow inside the beltway question of who leaked the information about Plame to the media. Entirely forgotten or ignored has been what this leak was all about to begin with. For that, you have to go back and look at what Wilson did in the first place that so enraged or frightened the vice president and the president. And that was to go to Niger, one of the poorest nations in Africa, to prove conclusively that there was no truth to a set of forged notes on the letterhead of the Niger embassy in Rome purporting to be receipts for 400 tons of Niger uranium ore allegedly being sought by Iraq Saddam Hussein. Wilson knew those documents were cheap forgeries. The name of the mines official on the paper was someone who hadn't been in office for years, but he went to Niger anyhow, just to make doubly certain that no such purchase attempt had been made. None had. So the real question then is, who is behind those forged documents? There's an interesting story here and an important mystery to be solved. No mainstream American media organization has pursued this story. Most Americans, consequently, don't even know what a grand lie Bush and the White House perpetrated upon them and the Congress in order to win approval for an attack on Iraq. Perhaps now that Libby has gone down for his part in this grotesque crime, some editor will ask the obvious question, why did the White House and the Office of Vice President go to such extraordinary lengths to attack Wilson and his wife? And more importantly, who was behind those Niger embassy burglaries and the forged uranium ore sale documents? And what was the Office of Special Projects doing meeting in Rome in December 2001 with the head of Italian intelligence? Make no mistake, this whole story has the odor of a black op designed to target the American people. If so, it was an act of high treason. It is not just Libby who should go to jail for this crime. It is the president and the vice president. At this point, whether or not the mainstream media decide to do their job, one has to hope that Fitzgerald, with Libby in the bag, will take the next step and hold the prospect of a lengthy prison sentence recommendation over the convict's head in order to try and win from him a promise of cooperation with the prosecution. Because Libby knows who is behind all of this. And that's the real story that needs to be told. Now, you can find this at commondreams.org yesterday. Dave Lindorf. And coincidentally, I got an email from George in Alhambra, California, who said, good evening, Mike. It seems that the greater meaning behind the Scooter Libby conviction continues to be lost. While the pundits argue their senseless points of view in the aftermath of the trial, one thing should be strikingly clear to everyone. If Dick Cheney knew that his pre-war intel was solid, he would not have given Joe Wilson's article in the New York Times the least bit of attention. Cheney took action to smear Wilson because he felt threatened. Cheney's a big boy. We know very well that there is not very much that intimidates him, but it is as clear as can be that Cheney did what he did because he knew that his pre-war intel was bogus. If Cheney knew that he was standing on solid ground with his Niger claim, then he probably would not have even read Joe Wilson's article. I just don't understand how this point continues to be washed over in the mainstream media. George in Alhambra. Well, both George and Dave Lindorf and you and I, because we've been thinking about the same stuff, I'm sure, have hit the nail squarely on the head. George Bush and Dick Cheney, and we've been talking about this, oh, Christ, for how long? They lied to us. You don't have to be a weatherman to know which way the wind is blowing. They lied us into war. What in the hell does it take to remove these two rat bastard killers from office? What does it take? What does it take to impeach them, try them in the Senate, and remove them? I know what it takes. It takes Republicans in the House and the Senate to display some courage, of which they have none. They're pigs, liars, and scum. Always have been, always will be. Can you imagine some piece of human waste like Mitch McConnell voting for impeachment against a Republican administration that lied us into a war? No. Hell no. But the same Mitch McConnell will vote to remove Bill Clinton from office because he got a little and then lied about it. These evil, rotten pigs, these Republicans. You're a Republican, sir, ma'am. God damn you for what you've done to my country. Damn you. Man. It's infuriating. All right, just a couple of quick ones here. The Guacamoron is hitting the road. He's going down to South America, and he's going to talk like this when he speaks English, because you see, to Bush, if you talk like this when you speak English in front of Spanish speakers, it means that you are empathetic with how they talk. This is what he does. He's going on an anti-Hugo Chavez tour of South America next week. So he did a little PR with CNN in Espanol today. Reporter there, Juan Carlos Lopez, had some questions for Jorge, including this one about the Libby verdict. Lopez said, Mr. President, I want to ask you about the conviction of Louis Libby. Your critics are saying that his conviction makes the promise that you made to bring honor and dignity back to the White House, that this promise will go unmet.
Yeah, first of all, this was a lengthy trial on a serious matter.
Really?
And a jury of his peers convicted him. And
really?
And we've got to respect that conviction.
Yeah, okay.
Secondly, this is an ongoing legal matter.
Uh-huh.
There's more legal procedures to take place.
Uh-huh.
And at this time, it's inappropriate for me or the administration to be issuing comments about this serious matter. On a personal note, I was sad.
Uh-huh.
I was sad for a man who had worked in my administration, and particularly sad for his family.
Sad that justice was served? You twit? Yeah, it's a sad day when criminals are convicted, George. You might as well hear him say, yeah, I was rooting for the felon. Now, this thug sits there and talks about it's a legal procedure. There's more procedures to take place. You know, Scooter Libby has been tried, convicted, found guilty. How about Jose Padilla, an American citizen held on American soil in solitary confinement for how many years? 3, until he went mad and couldn't even apply habeas corpus, couldn't even get his attorneys to approach a judge somewhere, couldn't even until the case was ready to go to the Supreme Court. Then this rat bastard George Bush orders him turned over to civil authorities to avoid the obvious mess that would turn up when an American citizen like Jose Padilla, I don't give a goddamn if he murdered the entire state of Montana, he has legal rights that Scooter Libby had and walks free tonight, even though he's been convicted of perjury and obstruction of justice. George, man, you irritate me.
I'm on the right side. I'm on the right side. The only side.
Border and coast to coast, the Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
So, in his interview on CNN in Espanol today, Juan Lopez, the interviewer, also asked El Chimpo, I don't know, about the new commission he formed to investigate the utter disrespect shown to American soldiers, in this instance, at Walter Reed Medical Facility. It's called the Returning Wounded Warrior Commission, headed by Bob Dole and Donna Shalala. Lopez asks, as Commander-in-Chief, what do you say to the veterans who have gone through a very hard time at Walter Reed and other hospitals? There are commissions, there are solutions that are being proposed, but what do you as Commander-in-Chief say to those veterans?
I say anything other than excellent care is unacceptable. And, I've been to Walter Reed a lot. There's some fantastic doctors and nurses and healers. And yet we found that there was some substandard care in a part of that, in part of that organization, and we're going to correct it. I had Bob Dole and Donna Shalala in today. They're chairman of this very important commission I put together that will analyze the care our soldiers get from the battlefield into the Defense Department, then into the veterans, and then into community. And I want to make sure there is that is a seamless transition of excellent care.
Now that the criminal treatment of these Americans, these wounded Americans, is being exposed, huh? I've been to Walter Reed a lot, and yet mysteriously I never noticed any problems. Not until the Democrats won the election and started holding hearings, then all of a sudden I noticed. So we have another commission. This is going to be like the 9/11 commission. This is going to be like the Iraq War Commission. Now it's going to be the Returning Wounded Warrior Commission. Huh? Huh? Dear God. And speaking of the grievously wounded, the number of U.S. troops needed to carry out this bastard's so-called surge could approach 30,000 very quickly. I thought it was 21,500. No, that was a couple of weeks ago. That's according to a senior Pentagon official, said yesterday. In testimony to the House of Representatives Budget Committee, Deputy Secretary of Defense Gordon England said that the military commanders in Iraq want more soldiers. You knew that was going to happen, didn't you, Truth Seeker? I kind of thought that they might wait maybe a couple, 3 months until, some rock star or rap star did something that caught everybody's attention, and then they would slip it in. Man. Aides to Jason Leopold, also writing at Truthout, says aides to Speaker of the House Pelosi and Congressman John Conyers, Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, said they were engaged in discussions about the possibility of holding immediate hearings and subpoenaing Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald to provide details of his nearly four-year-old investigation and the evidence he obtained regarding the role Cheney and other White House officials played in the leak of covert CIA operative Valerie Plame Wilson. The aides requested anonymity because they were not yet permitted to discuss Congress's course of action in the matter publicly. I certainly hope that's the case. And as I noted on my little tiny itsy bitsy teeny, it's not even a blog, program notes yesterday, for those of you over a certain age who remember in fine detail, as I do, the entire unfolding of the Watergate from the burglary, I remember reading in the, I guess it was the Atlanta Journal-Constitution back in, when was it, 70, when was the Watergate break-in? 72? Somewhere, it was a little article in about Watergate, the Democratic National Committee's offices in the Watergate hotel and apartment complex in D.C. had been broken into. Yada, yada. All these Cuban operatives and a couple of Anglo operatives were discovered. They were arrested. But from the very beginning of that, the word went out, keep your mouth shut. And James McCord, who was a special assistant to the president and one of the Watergate burglars, one of the plumbers supposed to plug the leaks. McCord was tried and convicted on six counts of obstruction and perjury and so on and so forth. And he went before Judge John Sirica for his sentencing. And at that point, James McCord said to Judge, there's more to this than meets the eye. I've been asked to commit perjury at the request of the Office of the President. And thus began what became Watergate. Hopefully, Louis Libby will do the same thing. Nobody wins. Coincidence and likely stars, they dog your trail like a pack of lies.
We are redefining war on our terms.
Jesus, God. Now, Ron in Briarwood, New York, commenting on that soundbite where Bush says he's sad for Scooter Libby.
Ron writes, the chimp wasn't sad for Valerie Plame and her family. He was sad for Scooter. Yeah, well, of course. I mean, when you are a criminal, like Bush is, when you are a punk, a liar, a perjurer, a real rat bastard, your empathy or your sympathy is for other liars and other rat bastards and other war criminals, not for normal, decent people. Oh, my God. Not for the rubes. Screw the rubes. Hey! We work in the White House. We can do whatever we want. If the president does it, it's legal. And Didier from Boston writes regarding this new commission that poor Bob Dole, if he goes out in the cold, Kathy, his face is going to freeze and it's just going to crack, isn't it? Isn't it just going to break into pieces? Why do people who have those kinds of intense, profound facelifts not realize what they look like? What is that, the blindness of ego?
His eyes look like giant fried eggs in his head. I mean, it's really frightening. I saw him doing an interview yesterday, and I thought around the time of the election last year when he was a talking head, so to speak, somewhere, that he looked pretty scary, but it's like his skin has been bleached also. It's like preternaturally white. It's the damnedest thing of it. Unless my color was just all wonky on the television.
No, I think the color on the TV is just fine.
I mean, he's got that artificially brown hair and then that clenched fist he waves around in this very white. I mean, it's like something out of Dr. Strangelove. I don't know what's wrong with him.
Oh, God. So he and Donna, has Donna Shalala gotten any taller?
No, but she's gotten a little wider.
What is she, about 3'6"? This is, she
I
is.
I think Clinton liked his women short. You know, Madeleine Albright
be careful.
I didn't say anything about the shapes of their head.
Be careful.
You know, you think about, except of course for Janet Reno, who was certainly the exception
she
that
wasn't
proves the
short.
Rule.
No, I don't think.
No, she was like
God.
A redwood.
This is like being stuck in a funhouse in an insane asylum somewhere.
But, you know, Madeleine Albright was tiny and, you know, so were her skirts. But that's another story. It's a whole bunch of freaks out there in Washington. I say bring on the bears.
Donna Shalala and Robert Dole. Oh, this is going to be great. How old is Dole now? 90-something? He's a World War II vet. Bless his heart. I'm not mocking his service to the country at all. Up against the fascists, but now he's working for a fascist. This makes no sense. You know, he got his body seriously wounded, I think, in Italy, in the Italian campaign, and fighting those fascists, and now he's working for a fascist.
Well, his skin is baby smooth. There's not a wrinkle on his face.
I can imagine what his chest looks like. Oh, well, I don't care. I really don't. Somebody said, many people have said, including my mother, getting old is not for sissies. So, you know, whatever gets you through the night. I just find it amusing. And, you know, people can, there's a picture of me that circulated around the internet that they use on Democratic Underground an awful lot. And it's a picture that was taken of you and me in New York. And I don't know what happened. I think there was a blast of air, but my comb-over is standing up. It looks like this hideous comb-over standing up like a coxcomb, as in chicken, male chicken. And it's just flapping up there, just standing up there. And you're looking up at me like, in that picture, you're looking at me like, I don't know, what's on your head?
I was actually kissing you on the cheek in that picture, and I just happened to catch that in the corner of my eye. I think you call that your Bilbo Baggins moment.
My Bilbo Baggins moment, yeah. So, you know, if you're going to give, you got to take, right? Anyway, Didier from Boston writes about this new commission. Hey, Mike, enough. Why is anyone still putting up with the so-called bipartisan commissions appointed by that nitwit in the White House? You remember the bang-up job his last two commissions did. The 9/11 commission, anyone? Why does he have to appoint a commission? He's the main perpetrator. What would this country be if any criminal would have the right to appoint a bipartisan commission? Not to investigate his crime, but to tell the whole world what the solution to the problem should be. And why do we have institutions like Congress? The first soundbite coming from the two co-chairs is already enough to make me sick. The truth is not bipartisan. Someone gagged me with a spoon. Didier. Okay. Oh, a last thing here. The Bush administration acknowledged yesterday that its treatment of terrorism suspects was being questioned. Even as it used an annual report to criticize the human rights records of Iraq, Afghanistan, and a long list of other countries, right? Condoleezza Rice, the shoe lady, said in releasing the congressionally mandated report about human rights violations, quote, "Our democratic system of governments is accountable, but it is not infallible." What? This report weighs the human rights situation in 193 countries, but not the United States. So this is just a classic case, congressionally mandated to report every year on human rights violations around the world, but not here. And you don't have to go to Guantanamo. You can go into any prison in the United States of America, most of which, maybe not most, but a huge percentage of which is now run by CCA. What is that? The Corrections Corporation of America? A Wackenhut? Outsourcing, don't you know? Huh? So the torture that everybody has their bloomers in a wad where it concerns people that are identified as enemy combatants, a made-up term, sort of like Tinkerbell. You don't have to get outraged about what's happening to enemy combatants. You can get outraged if you're so inclined about what's happening in American prisons. American citizens convicted of various crimes. No mercy for criminals? Okay, if that's your attitude. If somebody's in prison for armed robbery or drug offenses or murder or what have you, no mercy? Okay, that's certainly a tenable position in America 2007. But it doesn't eliminate, preclude, or erase the fact that torture goes on in American prisons here, now. Okay. It's about 18 before the hour. Let's go to some phone calls here, starting with Chuck in Fayette, North Carolina. Chuck is our correspondent who runs I'm sorry, Chuck, your organization again, anti-war organization.
Not bad. You remember pretty well, Mike.
Well,
called Quaker House.
The Quaker House. That's right. Yeah. I thought you were associated with the Quakers. That's right.
That's right. Yeah. Been grinding.
I've been getting your emails about this event coming up the 17th. I haven't mentioned them on the air because it's only in Fayetteville, North Carolina, right?
What do you mean only? Where else is that?
Well, that's true.
This happens to be the home of the Special Forces, the 82nd Airborne.
That's
Special Operating Command. Yeah. What else do you want?
That's very true.
You've also got five Walmart supercenters.
You do. And I remember when I went to school there, somebody said, if God didn't love North Carolina, why did he make the sky Carolina blue?
Well. Yeah.
All right, so it's in Fayetteville, and it's
I want to plug our peace rally, March 17th, that week from Saturday, especially for Atlanta and the Southeast. It's not nearly as far away as Washington.
That's true.
And we have a lot of good stuff lined up. I have Holly Neer going to be singing for people. And we got a website, FayettevillePeaceRally.org, with lots of pictures and stuff.
FayettevillePeaceRally.org.
Yeah, it's actually Fayetteville-Peace-Rally.org.
Okay.
I think I'm responsible for those hyphens. Maybe I should think again for next year.
Fayetteville-Peace-Rally.org.
Your screener didn't want me to go off topic, but I can't help but mention that in 3 days it's going to be a year from the time we found my friend Tom Fox dead in Baghdad. And you know, today is the 42nd anniversary of the Selma March that got beaten up on the bridge.
Yes, at some point this evening I was going to mention that.
Good.
A good friend of mine is Congressman John Lewis.
John Lewis, yeah.
Yeah, I've known John just by virtue of living in the same city, kind of moving in the same circles for years and years and years. I've probably known John for 30 years.
Well, one feature of our rally this year in Fayetteville is that one of our major speakers is going to be the president of the North Carolina NAACP. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of exciting, not only because he's a great preacher, but also because we think down here we're beginning to start to knit back together the sort of white progressive and black civil rights coalition that Dr. King really was putting together when he took that bullet in Memphis. And
yeah.
It's been a long time, but maybe there's some signs of hope.
Yeah.
Our 17th Fayetteville, folks.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks again for checking in. Checking in, Chuck. It is Fayetteville-Peace-Rally.org, and it's scheduled for St. Patrick's Day.
And I'm sure glad you're back on the air, Mike. You don't know how much.
Thank you.
When you were away.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Stay in. Is he gone? Stay in touch, Chuck. Stay in touch.
Sit up and pay attention.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Hey Joe, where you going with that gun in your hand? You can take your revenge.
10 before the hour. I'm so old, I remember when the United States of America was a defender of human rights and not a violator. That's how old I am. Do you know there's a whole generation of people growing up who have no idea that we used to work around the globe, Amnesty International, all sorts of non-government organizations that strove mightily to expose human rights abuses, people jailed for political points of view, religious points of view, people who were tortured. We just... In this country, we used to break our backs trying to expose this stuff. If you've ever participated in one of the mailings for Amnesty, which I have, where they provide you with the names of people in Laos, so it's not Laos anymore, but Southeast Asia or China or African countries or Central American countries where prisoners of conscience were being held and tortured. And the United States used to be a country that did what it could. That's the reason for this congressionally mandated report that has to come out every year to report on the bastards. And now here we are. We're a torture country. We're a torture country, for Christ's sake. We're a country that denies people that we arrest, that we take custody of, we deny them the most essential foundation of a real system of justice, and that is habeas corpus. What am I being charged with? Where is the case that the government or the authorities is making against me? Where is it? And we've now declared that doesn't work anymore. You are an enemy combatant. I will hold you until I goddamn well get tired of it. And if you don't like it, rot. I will hold you until you go mad. I will deny you a speedy trial. I will deny 5 or 6 provisions in the Bill of Rights to you because you are scum and I am George W. Bush or Alberto Gonzalez or Dick Cheney. How much more of this are the American people going to put up with? How much more? How much more of this? Really and truly, how much more? And in response to the Human Rights Report, the Chinese have accused the United States of hypocrisy. in its annual response to Washington's criticism of Beijing's human rights record, saying that the United States has no right to blacken the name of other countries. The official Chinese news agency Xinhua reports, quote, as in previous years, the State Department pointed the finger at human rights conditions in more than 190 countries and regions, including China, but avoided touching on the human rights situation in the United States. The report goes on, relying on its strong military power, the United States has trespassed on the sovereignty of other countries and violated human rights in other countries. It goes on to say, the human rights document says the United States has a flagrant record of violating the Geneva Convention in systematically abusing prisoners during the Iraqi war and the war in Afghanistan. That was in not the human rights report from the United States, but the response from China. The report also took aim at crime, civil rights infringements, and racism in the United States. Xinhua quoted the report, the Chinese report, as saying, ethnic minorities are at the bottom of American society. Racial discrimination is also deep-rooted in America's law enforcement and judicial systems. And it goes on. This has become more or less a game between the U.S. government and the Chinese government. You know, your human rights abuses are worse than ours. No, yours are. No, yours are. Yours are! No, yours are! Jesus. But again, I remember when we were defenders of human rights rather than perpetrators. I'm sure there's some of you out there who are that old too, right? Huh? Matthew is calling from Bedford, Texas. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Mike.
How you doing?
I'm doing. The double standards of these Republicans, I get. I mean, I was listening to your moron sounds and oxymoron sounds, and it's hilarious to me. Hearing Drug Rush just now come short of making me fall out of my chair, especially hearing all this chaos in the neocons as a result of this Libby trial. I mean, half of them are being all, aw, poor Scooty Woody Libby Wibby, he's a Democrat's whipping boy, go nice on him.
Right.
And then the other half, desperate to cover their asses, are like, well, I don't care. Justice was kind of served, but it was just Libby, nobody else, okay?
Right, right.
And if you add some manner of sound effects like of dripping sweat or labored panting, that's pretty much where I see these neeks now. Am I surprised? Oh, God, no. I find it funny as hell. Yeah. But
wait a minute. Are you allowed to say hell? You're a pretty young guy.
Oh, if you've heard half the stuff people my age has said, you'd probably fall out of your chair.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, well.
But I do.
I'm just kidding. I'm absolutely, Matthew, just kidding. Don't pay any attention to what I say. Because you know you're making good points. Obviously, you always make good points. I'm always glad to hear from you.
And well, like I said, I find it as funny as hell. But if anyone is unsure of how fickle these neeks are, and I wish people would start calling the neocon neeks because it sounds kind of derogatory.
Neeks.
N-E-E-K-S.
Okay.
But anyway, if anybody is unsure of these neeks' intentions or lack of thought process whatsoever, you needn't look any further than how they are now. They are deliciously pathetic, Mike. The monsters are tripping over themselves like babes in the woods.
They are. Matthew, I got to go.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Matthew. Always good to hear from you. We'll talk again. Matthew from Bedford, Texas. Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. I had something unusual happen over the past 10 days. I received an article, same article from two people. One is a Jew from Atlanta who spent an awful lot of time in Israel. The other is from a Christian in Atlanta who is a Palestinian. And they both sent me the same article. I don't know if they know each other. I have no earthly idea. In my association with both, I don't think I've ever noticed their paths have crossed. But an American Jew who spent a lot of time in Israel, a Palestinian Christian Arab who is an American citizen. It's titled A Moral Judgment, and it's written by John Whitbeck. As Palestine teeters on the brink of the civil war long sought by Israel, the United States, and the European Union, with Israel and the United States sending arms to the side perceived as responsive to Israel and Western wishes for use against the side perceived as representing Palestinian interests, it may be timely to examine the justification put forward by Israel, the United States, and the European Union for their collective punishment of the Palestinian people in retaliation for their having made the wrong choice in their democratic elections in January 2006, the refusal of Hamas to recognize Israel or to recognize Israel's existence or to recognize Israel's right to exist. These three verbal formulations have been used by media, politicians, and even diplomats interchangeably as though they meant the same thing. They do not. Recognizing Israel or any other state is a formal legal diplomatic act by a state with respect to another state. It is inappropriate, indeed nonsensical, to talk about a political party or movement, even one in a sovereign state, extending diplomatic recognition to a state. To talk of Hamas recognizing Israel is simply sloppy, confusing, and deceptive shorthand for the real demand being made. Recognizing Israel's existence is not a logical nonsense and appears on first impression to involve a relatively straightforward acknowledgement of a fact of life, like death and taxes. Yet there are serious practical problems with this formulation. What Israel, within what borders, is involved? The 55% of historical Palestine recommended for a Jewish state by the UN General Assembly in 1947? The 78% of historical Palestine occupied by Israel in 1948 and now viewed by most of the world as Israel or Israel proper, the 100% of historical Palestine occupied by Israel since June 1967 and shown as Israel on maps in Israeli school books. Israel has never defined its own borders, since doing so would necessarily place limits on them. Still, if this were all that were being demanded of Hamas, it might be possible for it to acknowledge, as a fact of life, that the state of Israel exists today within some specified borders. Recognizing Israel's right to exist, the actual demand, is an entirely different league, however. This formulation does not address diplomatic formalities or simple acceptance of present realities. It calls for a moral judgment. There is an enormous difference between recognizing Israel's existence and recognizing Israel's right to exist. From a Palestinian perspective, the difference is in the same league as the difference between asking a Jew to acknowledge that the Holocaust happened and asking him to acknowledge that it was right that the Holocaust happened, that the Holocaust was somehow morally justified. To demand that Palestinians recognize Israel's right to exist is to demand of a people who have for almost 60 years been treated and continue to be treated as subhumans, unworthy of basic human rights, that they publicly proclaim that they are subhumans, and at least implicitly that they deserve what has been done and continues to be done to them. Even 19th century U.S. governments did not require the surviving Native Americans to publicly proclaim the rightness of their ethnic cleansing by the Pale Faces as a condition precedent to even discussing what reservation might be set aside for them under economic blockade and threat of starvation until they shed whatever pride they had left and conceded the point. Some believe that Yasser Arafat did concede the point in order to buy his ticket out of the wilderness of demonization and earn the right to be lectured directly by the Americans. In fact, in his famous statement in Stockholm in late 1988, he accepted Israel's right to exist in peace and security. This formulation significantly addresses the conditions of existence of a state, which, as a matter of fact, exists. It does not address the existential question of the rightness of the dispossession and dispersal of the Palestinian people from their homeland to make way for another people coming from abroad. The original conception of the formulation Israel's right to exist and of its utility as an excuse for not talking to any Palestinian leadership which still stood up for the fundamental rights of the Palestinian people are attributed to Henry Kissinger, the grand master of diplomatic cynicism. There can be little doubt that those states which still employ this formulation do so in full consciousness of what it entails, morally and psychologically, for the Palestinian people, and for the same cynical purpose, as a roadblock against any progress toward peace and justice in Israel-Palestine, and as a way of helping to buy more time for Israel to create more facts on the ground, while blaming the Palestinians for their own suffering. However, many private citizens of goodwill and decent values may well be taken in by the surface simplicity of the words Israel's right to exist into believing that they constitute a self-evidently reasonable demand, and that refusing such a reasonable demand must represent perversity or a terrorist ideology rather than a need to cling to their self-respect and dignity as full-fledged human beings, which is deeply felt and thoroughly understandable in the hearts and minds of a long-abused people who have been stripped of almost everything else that makes life worth living. That this is so is evidenced by polls showing that the percentage of the Palestinian population which approves of Hamas's steadfastness in refusing to bow to this humiliating demand by their enemies, notwithstanding the intensity of the economic pain and suffering inflicted on them by the Israeli and Western siege, substantially exceeds the percentage of the population which voted for Hamas in January 2006. It may not be too late to focus decent minds around the world on the unreasonableness, indeed the immorality, of this demand, and of the verbal formulation on which it is based, whose use and abuse already have caused so much misery, and threatened to cause more, so that they can be recognized as the cynical roadblock to peace, which they are, and be cast aside. Now, this appeared originally in the December 9th issue of Counterpunch, and it now appears in the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, the March 2007 edition. And the reason I think it's timely to talk about this in the first place, nobody ever talks about the right to existence of the Palestinian people. Never. Ever. You never hear that. Never. Palestinians are labeled terrorists, subhumans. On and on. If you are the least bit aware of the situation in the Middle East, you know of what I speak, okay? But every single Democratic candidate for president, as far as I know, has pledged its absolute allegiance to Israel's right to exist and has said nothing about the Palestinian people. Now, you know, Jimmy Carter just took a short trip to hell for writing his book about the situation of apartheid that is being applied to the Palestinian people. And he's really had his ass kicked up around his shoulders, hasn't he? But don't you think it's about time for the American public to at least become just a tiny bit aware of what's going on there? Because is that not one of the focal points of all the problems that we're facing right now?
If a dictator's in trouble, then you give a helping hand. If you're fighting for your freedom, then I'm your man. you'll be out of luck if you're a pal.
Your host for a Peance Friance Future, it's Mike Malloy.
Here comes the helicopter, second time today. Everybody scatters and hopes it goes away. How many kids they've murdered?
21 past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Who we got here? Sarge has been holding on forever. Welcome to the program, Sarge. Hey, buddy. How you doing?
Oh, okay, and you, sir?
Doing great.
Hey, first of all, let me make a little request to the people. Here's a lady in Cincinnati, Ohio, that wants to come down, and she has the skills that are needed down in Jackson County, Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
And she's willing to come down and work for a good while, for as long as she can. And she needs transportation down. And I was hoping maybe some of the truck drivers out there, maybe some people traveling out there that listen to this show might be willing to help her get down here. They can contact me. My phone number is listed at unreportednews.net, or they can email me, sarge@unreportednews.net. But
okay.
We sure need her services down here. If anybody can help her get down here, we certainly could use them.
All right, Sarge. Now, she's coming from where?
Cincinnati, Ohio.
Okay. All right.
And that when Chuck was talking about his deal on the 17th,
yes,
that's going to culminate in Jackson County.
Oh, really?
Actually, yes. It's Veterans for Peace, and they're going to come on down to Jackson County. They ought to arrive here on the 26th. They're going to stay through the 31st and help Jim and his coalition do some work down here and document things that's going on in the area. So we're really excited about them coming.
Super.
So,
super.
Okay, now what I called about.
Okay.
Yeah, you know me, Mike.
Yes, indeed.
But anyway, this deal about the wounded warrior really upsets me.
Oh, this new commission?
Yes, it really upsets
well,
me.
Well, let me ask you, what the hell are they supposed to, what are Shalala and Dole supposed to discover? What's already been reported all over the place, what the veterans all know, what their families all know, what Congress now knows, well, what the hell is a commission about?
I don't understand that. That's why I say it's upsetting, because, number one, Bob Dole, has a man just gotten so old he's gone senile or what? Because, I mean, this man, he really is a true hero from wartime, okay? So why is he throwing all of his validity as a veteran away to support this bunch of this deserter in the White House, this draft dodger in the vice presidency? Why is he throwing everything away to back these?
I have no idea. I'm sure it's probably politics or desire to get another 15 minutes in the spotlight. I mean, he is married to a United States senator. I guess that's what you would call Elizabeth Dole or Liddy. He's a former presidential candidate, former senator, former speaker, a Senate majority leader, yada, 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 yada. And he's kind of disappeared and been reduced. Let's face it, Sarge, when you're reduced to making Pepsi commercials and Viagra commercials, and at one time you were a candidate for the presidency of the United States, that's one hell of a fall, isn't it? Or am I wrong there?
Well, you know, I'd rather take that kind of fall than I would to prostitute myself out to a bunch of criminals.
And that's the difference between you and Bob Dole.
I reckon so. But you know who I wish was on that committee? And you know, of course, it would never work out this way, but I'd like to see Max Cleland put on it.
Oh, ho, ho, ho. Yeah, why did they pass him up? He's a former director of Veterans Affairs during the Clinton years, head of the VA, I believe.
I ever saw, too.
And it was during the Clinton years when it looked like the veterans, the VA hospitals were going to turn the corner, at least this one here in Atlanta did. I can't believe Donna Shalala, no offense to Donna Shalala, But what the hell does she know? Is she a veteran? I know she was involved. What was she? She was Clinton's head of health and human services for 8 years. Okay, well, that doesn't have anything to do with Veterans Affairs. I don't care how they spin it. And Bob Dole, what has he ever done? Okay, he's a veteran. So are, you know, 20 million Americans veterans. But you're absolutely right. Why didn't they say to Max Cleland, here you go?
Yeah, I you know, I'd accepted Bob Dole with Max Cleland, you know, but this one, this is just more BS, you know, and these people, they're just, it's just another way to avoid prosecution for all the evil and all the anti-American, everything that they've done. These people, I mean, what they've done down here is atrocious. What they've done to the veterans is atrocious. What they've done to the soldiers, and it's just wrong.
I hear you.
I'm gonna let you go, Mike. Thank you, buddy.
All right, Sarge. Thanks for checking in. Take care. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
American way. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Flight of fancy on a windswept field, standing alone, my senses reel. Fatal attraction is holding me fast. How can I escape this irresistible grasp?
25 before the hour, Karen in Ventura, California writes in, "Hi, Mike, I'm glad that Chuck brought up March 17th. That was our caller from Fayetteville, North Carolina. I'm glad that Chuck brought up March 17th, as there are many peace rallies being planned across the country. I have registered the rally going on in Ventura, California at unitedforpeaceandjustice.com. If other of your listeners want to know what is going on in their part of the country on St. Patrick's Day, this is a good site to visit, unitedforpeaceandjustice.com. Is it United for Peace and Justice or is it unitedforpeace.com? Check them both out. Many people feel helpless at the end of the day with all that is going on right now, Karen writes. Participation in rallies gives one hope. Together we can send out the message of stop the funding and end the war to our elected representatives. At this point, I'm not sure that if they are listening, but many of us refuse to give up. Karen in Ventura. I think it's United for Peace, isn't it? Yeah, unitedforpeace.org, I believe, is the website. Suzanne in L.A. writes, "Good evening, Mike. We're only 400 away from 55,000 signatures at draftgore.com. Isn't that a nice round number?" Okay. All right. Do we have 400 listeners right now, or do we have our usual gang of 36? What do you think? I don't know. All right. If we do have 400 listeners right now and you haven't gone to, I wish I were famous, like big-time talk show host, so that I could say there's only 55,000 signatures at Draft Gore, 400 short of that. So, you know, and there would be beep, and there would be another 400 just that quick. So, all right. Well, if all 38 of the people listening to the program tonight, if you haven't signed the petition, oh, damn, they probably already all have. Suzanne, I'm sorry. Seriously, go to draftgore.com if you haven't signed the petition. And sign it if you're so inclined. I mean, I'm not telling you what to do. You may think, you know, I got a bunch of emails the other night telling me Gore is, you know, just this criminal. This, you know, just, ugh. A couple of the emails were just, ugh. And they cited some examples why they believe he's vile and foul and thuggish and terrible and so on and so forth. I don't have a lot of hope for too many Democratic candidates or politicians, you know, let me explain that. I despise Republican politicians, but I think Democratic politicians are kind of cowardly, kind of go with the flow, kind of afraid to make waves, kind of, you know, and I'd like to see a more aggressive Democratic Party. I know at Al Gore, you know, the various times in his career, I think a lot of people are still pissed off at him because he was one of the founders of the Democratic Leadership Council. But I think Al Gore has had his conversion on the road to Damascus. I think he has. I don't know. You know, do what you want to do. But I'm really seriously thinking about it. Yeah, you know, my ideal ticket would be Kucinich. I said that 4 years ago, 3 years ago. Sure, it'd be Kucinich. I'm a Kucinich man. Start to finish. And somebody wrote to me and said he's totally anti-abortion and wants to absolutely smash women back into a subservient role of not having control over their own bodies or privacy where it concerns such a such an issue. I know that Kucinich, because he's Catholic, at one time was anti-abortion. You can't blame Catholics for being anti-abortion until they educate themselves onto the reality or into the reality that the Roman Church has not a bit of business invading a woman's private space, a woman's privacy, a woman's decision. Not the Catholic Church, not the Bush administration, not the Arabs, not the Jews, not the fundamentalist Christians. Nobody has a right to do that. Nobody, nobody, nobody. That's just so basic. So if Kucinich at one point had that belief pounded into him, it was my understanding that his position became more of a libertarian position, that he and his would not subscribe to the idea of abortion, but that as chief executive officer of the United States, he would do absolutely nothing to prevent or prohibit the right of a woman to the privacy necessary to take care of her own physical needs, which is what Roe v. Wade is all about. We've said this so many times. It's not about abortion. It's about privacy. Jesus, why is it? Never mind. So if you're listening, if you want to go to draftgore.com and sign the petition, that, you know, might be a good thing to do. If you think Al Gore is a schmuck, you want nothing to do with him, well, then don't do it, you know, right? I signed. Did you sign? Did you go there and sign again? You did. Okay. Back to your phone calls. Tim is calling from San Diego. Tim, thanks for holding on. Welcome to the program.
Hey, another great show. No wonder I got out so late.
Well,
before I say that Bush is not a man of his word, and I'm just basically quoting him from, you know, when he talked about if there's anyone in his administration who is found guilty,
yeah,
ding ding,
right,
of
right,
a crime.
Right.
Anyways, obviously Bush can't be trusted since he's not a man of his word. And, you know, the question begs to be asked, is Libby, you know, since he walked out of the courtroom, is he still, like, on administrative leave?
Probably.
Or something or what?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like it gets back to the whole Brewster Jennings thing, where just look at the name, Brewster Jennings. Look it up, sports fans, and Wikipedia.org or whatever it is, where
right,
Brewster Jennings, it's listed as having one employee, and that was Valerie Plame.
Right.
But you look at the name Brewster Jennings, that was the president and founder of the oil company of New York, Saucony.
We mentioned this the other night. Brewster Jennings was the actual name of the guy who founded the company that became Mobil Oil, that became Exxon Mobil, right?
Yeah, excellent. You know, but before I get on any further, you know, we're coming up on a historic day here, and in certain parts of the world, we're, you know, like 20 minutes away from March 8th, and it's the anniversary of U.S. involvement in Vietnam. 3,500 Marines were sent to Da Nang, March 8th of 65. I was looking into going into my first year of high school in just a few months.
Is that right? It was tomorrow, huh?
Yeah. And since you brought up the deal of the Middle East and there not being a double standard as far as us exporting democracy.
Right.
You know, I think it, you know, it also kind of begs the question, when are we going to talk about the, God forbid, the Cranston Amendment that has been one of the biggest impetuses for the cover-up of the June 8, 1967 bombing of the USS Liberty? When is there ever going to be a true investigation that Crystal can't say, well, you know, this is not democracy.
Right, but you do understand, don't you, Tim, that when you talk about the attack on the USS Liberty, there might be 0.1% of the people listening to this program, and maybe 2% of the entire population of the United States know what the hell you're talking about.
Miguel. You're right.
Now, people can get the book, The Attack on the Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
They can get the book. They can read what happened.
You're right.
I believe it was during our shelling of Lebanon. And the Israeli Air Force, fully understanding what they were doing, unleashed hell on an American naval vessel that resulted in, I believe, the deaths of 38 soldiers, sailors? Was it 38?
Yeah, it was 34 at the time. But, you know, no less than these falling people have said that they don't trust the Israeli explanation. U.S. Secretary of State Dean Rusk, CIA Director Richard Helms, NSA Director Oliver Kirby,
right.
Special Assistant to the President Clark Clifford. It goes on and on. You know, NSA Deputy Director Louis W. Tordello,
mm-hmm.
And you know, it just goes on and on.
Right,
the standard that has inflamed the
sure.
Muslim community that basically embraces the tenets of the New Testament, and for some reason with our guilt complex, we want to live in the Old Testament where it's an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth and everything justified, you know, as long as there's corporate profit. So be it.
Well, we want to live in the Old Testament up to a point. None of these Christian fundamentalists, these dominionists, would ever consider stoning their daughters to death because they were disobedient.
Bingo.
But that's in there, too. You see, none of these dominionist Christians would ever consider the idea of murdering their children if their children mixed up fabrics and wore leather and wool at the same time.
Right.
Yet that's in there. You
or,
say.
Or if we married out of our race.
Well, that, too.
Are you with me that we could at least entertain a political party of Max Cleland and Tammy Duckworth
as
leaders of our country?
That would be an interesting combination.
Adequately qualified, ready, willing, and able to serve.
I hear you. Tim, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. Thanks for checking in. We'll talk again. Quick break. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight and answered your phone calls. Thanks to our senior correspondent, Chris in Minnesota. Mark Marshall, our webmaster. Catherine Bay, our executive producer. And please go to NovaMradio.com and sign up for downloads and podcasts. Become a founding member of Nova M Radio. Is that Chumbawamba? That song scares the hell out of me. Reg reminds me that USS Liberty attack occurred during the Six-Day War in 1967, not the Lebanese Civil War 15 years later. My bad. Susan says, yes, it is UnitedForPeaceAndJustice.org. UnitedForPeaceAndJustice.org. Thank you, Susan. Ken writes in, Mike, I'm an Iranian
Democrat, even back during the days that the majority of Iranians here were under the misconception that the Republicans were better for their cause and had a better foreign policy when dealing with the Middle East. It was always clear what they were up to. The Iranian community here in the United States blamed Carter and the Democrats for weakness against the regime that replaced the puppet Shah. Only now they are waking up. I have to disagree with your position that in the old days, the United States would defend human rights. Mike, it was always the way it is now. Torture was part of the training of Sabak. That was the Iranian secret police under the Shah. And it was known that the Israelis were training them and setting examples. The use of the Internet has made the news travel faster. And if the Internet was there 20 or 30 years ago, it would shed light on South America and the Reagan era, etc. In 60 years, nothing was done to stop Israel. You could argue that the double standard exists in the case of Israel, that they are special people. But are you willing to accept the premise that the same double standard is not present when the U.S. deals with the rest of the world, when selling U.S.-made weapons is a matter of profit? Pretending is a powerful tool for survival, you know. And I think Ahmadinejad is also a big pretender. Cheers, Ken. And then Kevin writes, subject line, when was America ever a defender of human rights? Kevin writes, I know I'm preaching to the preacher here, but only reiterating what you've spoken on many occasions. But our country was founded by eliminating the Native Americans, followed by 300-plus years of slavery and lynchings, followed by 100 years of segregation and lynchings, followed by the elimination of over a million Vietnamese, followed by Iran-Contra, followed by the killing of thousands of Panamanians, also known as Operation Just Cause, followed by Desert Storm, followed by Clinton's killing of hundreds of thousands of Iraqis via sanctions, followed by what we have now. While I am certain that things would have been different had men like JFK and RFK lived, the only time in my lifetime that I can honestly say that I was proud to be American was the 4 years that Carter was president. Kevin. Okay. And we got, I'm sorry if I didn't get to your email or your phone call tonight. We get an incredible amount of very, articulate is not the word I'm looking for, but very well thought out emails. And I'd like to get them all in. Back to the phone calls here. Jake is calling from Arcata or Arcadia, Canada. Is it which is it, Jake?
Well, it's Arcata, California.
Arcata, California. I'm sorry. I said Canada. My bad. My eyes are starting to glaze over. All right, Jake, what's up? What's up?
Well, I'd just like to give the listeners something that they can do constructively to help prod the Democrats in the Congress to do their job. The Democrats on the Intelligence Committee right now that Libby has been convicted, they can open up investigations, hearings into the vice president's numerous and egregious violations of national security.
That's right.
And that's what they can do, and they can, you know, pass those charges along to the Judiciary Committees, who can issue the articles of impeachment. And why the Democrats in Congress think they should just lay down and go along with what, unfortunately, Pelosi said, that impeachment is off the table? The American people want Bush and Cheney out of office, and the Democrats had better pay attention. Otherwise, they're going to be in trouble next election.
Well, I agree, and I've said on this program before, Jake, that it's not what Pelosi or Reid or Mike Malloy or Jake wants. It's what the Constitution of the United States demands. These people, Bush and Cheney, have committed high crimes and misdemeanors against the people of the United States. They violated their oath of office, and they have urinated all over the Constitution. So it's not up to us whether or not we feel up to the challenge of removing these bastards from office. It's what the Constitution demands. This is a part that I can't quite understand. I've flipped back and forth on what Cheney or what Reid and Pelosi have said. I understand on the one hand. On the other hand, no, that's bat squeeze. The Constitution of the United States demands that when the executive branch commits these kind of crimes, that they have to be removed, or the effort has to be made to remove them. And then I think back on how a Republican-controlled Congress moved against Clinton. They weren't able to remove him from office, but they did impeach him. And the House Judiciary Committee could enter articles of impeachment, and this bastard could be put on trial. The fact that there are not 60 votes in the Senate to convict him is immaterial. What would come out in these hearings would be, I think, enough to let not just America, but the rest of the world know that we're serious about our Constitution. Otherwise, screw it. Like Bush said, it's a goddamn piece of paper if we don't follow through on this. Tear it up, throw it away, and let's get on with fascism. So I hear what you're saying. Jake, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. All right? Take care. There is, really, this is insane. What do these two bandits have to do, Bush and Cheney? What has to happen? I just wish, you know, I understood that. What would it take to motivate Pelosi to instruct the House Judiciary Committee to begin hearings to introduce articles of impeachment to the full House? What would it take? What has to happen? Does Bush have to be caught in a compromising position with Harriet Myers? Would that do it? You know, with his drawers down around his ankles, would that do it? You know, impeachment is not just for oral sex anymore, right? Huh? How about destroying a country? Doesn't that... Oh, Jesus, never mind. Thanks for participating tonight. Oh, right up to the edge. I'll see you tomorrow night. Okay, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.